Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hello. Welcome, everyone, to The Distraction here on Fightful.com. Joseph's already distracted. He's looking elsewhere. You here, Joseph?
Apparently so. I mean, it's an hour early. I turned up to production 4 minutes for showtime. So I'm here. I think I'm here. We're not talking about wrestling, though, right? I don't want to do that, Jeremy.
We're talking about basketball today.
I'm told that Tobias Harris is not in the top 10 of all-star votes East Front Court. Huh?
Clay Thompson for free? Clay Thompson's top 10 West guards. He's had a hell of a season.
The dumbest system of all systems. Whatever. That actually is another topic for another day. So apparently I've seen some tweets and stuff and you were like, we're gonna go an hour early and we're gonna talk about wrestling for 7 hours. And I was like, Jeremy, we're not doing that. We're gonna do a solid hour and a half, no post show. I hear you're busy. I see a forbidden door behind you.
Yes.
So, you know, how is the bunker anyway? It looks good.
The bunker as well. People can see there is a forbidden door behind me further. Which way? Further this way. There we go.
Rob Van Dam.
People can see like 12-year-old me as a caricature. I can't say that word. How do you say that word, Joseph?
It's close. Caricature.
Okay.
You need to split the C and the T, but it's fine. You're close.
All right. Yeah. As a hockey player. So that was done many, many, many years ago.
It looks like Brett Brown. Is that what you were going for or not at 12 years old?
I mean, 12-year-old me might have been going for Brett Brown. Very possible.
I still go for Brett Brown, so yeah. I can relate. That's fine.
You just got to be – look, we're blessed to play this game, Joseph. We're blessed in the middle of a pandemic. We're just blessed to get in the gym every day, get these shots up.
It's your – what was the phrase? It's your key to the universe, right? The basketball. Yeah. Or in this case, the hockey puck. There you go. Peak Brett.
I'm Jeremy Lambert. With me, as always, Joseph Holbert. People might know us by now, maybe. Let's get the plugs out of the way. Fightful.com, check it out. YouTube.com/Fightful. Go there and subscribe to our videos. Subscribe to our page. Leave a thumbs up on every single video. Just go to every video and leave us a thumbs up on all the videos. Twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. There's no post show after today because I got things to do. And I don't know. We'll be back on Twitch on Tuesday. I think that'll probably be the next Twitch stream unless Sean ends up streaming something at like midnight. That's everything. Fightful Select. Everyone sign up to Fightful Select. Sean's dropping news. News on Lars Sullivan. Sean actually talked to Lars Sullivan. So got the word directly from him. That's it. Let's get into this. Leave us a super chat, everybody. You leave a super chat, question, comment, statement gets read on air, like our good friend JJ, who says, hello to my favorite stars. Hope everything is going good. Kenta still rules. Excited to see him on AEW. Thoughts on a potential relationship. JJ just booking the program here. We're going to get to that. JJ, we're going to get to that literally right now. Kenta showed up on AEW Dynamite last night, attacking Jon Moxley following the main event. He had his hoodie on. He had his mask on, mask off. It was Kenta. Jon Moxley had showed up on New Japan Strong the week prior, this past Friday. And so people were like, oh, man, Moxley's showing up on U.S. New Japan territory. What's going on here? Kenta then shows up on Dynamite. Kenta's wrestling next week on Dynamite, teaming with his good pal Kenny Omega against Jon Moxley and Lance Archer. Joseph, AEW and New Japan working together.
Pretty awesome moment, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was thinking about this a lot. We have become, especially I think in the early days of the Twitter and the wrestling, we have become used to this idea that, like, if a wrestler is teasing something too explicitly, it's not going to happen. And on the other hand, if they're dead silent about it, you can bet your house they're going to be there. Kenta has done an amazing job of, like, he teased this thing so emphatically and boldly that by the time he did it, he told us all he was going to do it basically on social and no one believed him,
yeah.
Which is awesome. There are three pieces to this, and we can go for each and every one of them because I think, I mean, we do have time, let's be honest. We have nothing else to talk about other than the Rumble. So I think for me as a fan, the first thing is like the personal sort of triumph for Kenta, right? Who, I mean, it's not hyperbolic to say when he left WWE, his whole career was like in flux. It was a weird time there. He ended up being just a guy on 205 Live. The talent on 205 Live didn't see him as just a guy, but that was what he was, you know? He goes back to New Japan, there's questions about Eric and Adjust. I think the results of that have been like mixed, leaning good. I think Ken has done a good job. He's obviously not what he was. That's life. That's the way it is. But to see now him in a position where he's like a pivotal player in a major deal in 2021, like the one of the biggest news stories in pro wrestling in 2021, it's really awesome for that guy. So that's the first thing, which I don't think there's a whole lot to add to, right? It is what it is. That's awesome. Then you go into the two actual pieces of the story here. You have the fact that as you see Kenta, it quickly dawns on you, this is not just New Japan Kenta, this is Bullet Club. So that isolated story is enhanced by this. That's the second. And then finally, of course, as you referenced there, the big picture, Jeremy Lambert, that we could have an Eddie Kingston Minoru Suzuki match coming down the line. You put all of this together and you end up knocking the Royal Rumble off of the leading headline talk for this show. So it was an extraordinary moment and I'm very, very excited about what it represents. Very excited.
On Kenta, first off, yeah, he teased the hell out of this. He was harassing Renee Young on Twitter, just tagging her on stuff. And like, why is your husband a coward and whatnot? And he said he's going to be in Jacksonville, but he's teased that a lot throughout like the last month or so. So no one like knew when it was going to happen or if it was going to happen because we didn't know if it was going to happen. So to see him show up was big. He really is a major player. And I think he was going to be a major player in 2020. I mean, dude, he closed Wrestle Kingdom attacking Naito. Mm-hmm. Like it seemed like he was going to be positioned as a big time player in 2020. Pandemic stuff happened. He got caught in the US. That's why he ended up winning New Japan Cup USA and got the briefcase and had to defend it 15 times before he finally gets his title shot here. And now he's again positioned very, very strongly as the first contracted New Japan talent to wrestle on an AEW show, to show up on an AEW show, and then he's wrestling next week. So looks like Kenta's going to have a big year, and good on him, because you're right, WWE run, whatever it was, is what it was. You can blame it on injuries, you can blame it on, all right, they lost faith in him, you can blame it on lack of motivation, whatever it was, he's clearly motivated now, he's been healthy, he's been able to do like a G1 schedule and everything, and like you said, like the talent in WWE, like when Kenta left, he got like everyone was just like, this sucks. Like, this is horrible. Yeah. So he's still very beloved. And I think he has a chip on his shoulder from everything that happened in the WWE run. Go ahead.
I just wanted to, it's important that, even though I know I said earlier, Jeremy, this is my bad, I said there's not a whole lot to add, but like you double down there on the point about what the talent thinks of him, right?
Yeah.
And I do think, we all like different stuff, right? We have our blind spots. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm the most educated, like Kenta guy. Let me tell you his match catalog. But I do think there's something to be said for, like, it feels like people have kind of lost sight of how like influential he was. Like most of the guys that wrestled on 205 Live when he was there legitimately have almost certainly stole stuff from him at some point in their career. Like he's not just, you know, a guy. He's an industry titan and a legend. Like he's a big deal. But carry on, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Your second point. What was your second point, Joseph? I've lost
the Bullet Club angle itself.
Yes.
The fact that, you know, he's a piece of that.
Okay, so I'm sure you saw the exclusive video where Omega confronts him. He's like, "Oh, I didn't know Brother Switchblade was sending a gift over," and he tries to too sweet him and everything. And Kent is like, "Shut the fuck up! Like we're not friends." And I mean, this whole Bullet Club thing has been going on here. You see Tama Tonga talk about it all the time. Tama Tonga was saying, "Slap these dudes." I don't know how much of this is a work, how much of this is a shoot, and I think like that's kind of the brilliance of it is like I just don't know how much there is bad blood between these two sides and how much of them is just and how much of them is, you know, just working everybody. So I like that aspect of it, and we will see what happens with the Bullet Club aspect. What do you think, Joseph? Do you think there's a work and a shoot aspect here?
To me, it's an angle they've wanted to do for a long time that was ill-suited to New Japan product and the New Japan crowd, who cared but didn't care to the degree that an AEW crowd would. To me, this is the chance to do the angle that, like, you know, that's the one they've been looking for. The only difference now is not only have they got the AEW setting to do it, they've also got Gallows and Anderson, who, again, whether you are a big Gallows and Anderson guy or not, they are pivotal pieces to the story. They just are, because Tamer is Carl's, like successor, effectively, right? That's the whole deal there. He does his finish and everything. So there's so many pieces to it. The idea of like which side is he on? It's a beautiful overarching angle for AEW to pull it off, and it would be the perfect way to kind of bridge that gap. I think all of our minds immediately go to a sort of cross promotional pay per view, eventually with New Japan and AEW, the same way Ring of Honor have done in recent years. And you can, I mean, you can't go wrong fantasy booking that thing. You can draw names out of a hat. But for now, with what you've got, you need to, I think, try and maximize what this Bullet Club thing is, because you haven't just got the new version of it. You've got the core in many ways anyway. With Gallows and Anderson, you kind of represent some of the core pieces. So, and then Tama's on the other side. I think it's something, man. I mean, if you can get Jay White to show up, like, I know this stuff's very niche. I get it. But that's what AEW is. It's a show for dorks like us. We love it. We're having fun.
I mean, if you can do some type of Bullet Club showdown at mm-hmm. a pay-per-view, like it's gonna hit. And I do think like Gallows and Anderson almost gotta like switch sides on that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're teasing the stuff with them and the Young Bucks anyway. So we'll see if they go that far. But yeah, if you can get a Jay White Kenny Omega match out of all of this, like that would be huge for both mm-hmm. companies. And we'll talk about New Japan's U.S. deal here in a second. There's not a whole lot to talk about with that. But if they can get Jay White over here and then Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, those are like the big names. Like Evil, I ain't got much interest in seeing him. Mm-hmm. Fale, what do you think? Fale against Nick Jackson? That'd be good, right?
Hey, man, that'd be fun on Dark. AEW Dark main event. I don't know. I mean, my mind immediately goes to like, I know it's become like a meme now, the Blood and Guts match they booked a year ago and it's just never arrived.
Yeah.
But like, dude, imagine Blood and Guts with just like Bullet Club Civil War. You know, it'd be something else. I think, because again, we've spoken about this on the show before, but it's like, it isn't just a thing that American fans know about. And even when they don't really know, there's like a mystique to it. Like, kind of want to know, you know? It's also like the roots of the promotion. It's all Elite Wrestling. The Elite is just literally the brother of Bullet Club, you know? So it's perfect. It makes logical sense. And of course, as you said, the dynamic of like Gallows and Anderson, I think the way they've handled that, AEW, has been perfect, because we don't know if Gallows and Anderson are naive to Don's like nonsense, because Don doesn't care about anyone but Omega, right? That's clear. But we don't know if Gallows and Anderson are naive to that because they just want to hang with their pals, or they're getting ready to betray the Bucks. It's all in flux, in motion. And then obviously now you've got the New Japan element over. It's like, there's a whole lot of ways to go. It's going to be difficult to piece together, but you've got the pieces in play, which is what matters most.
Yeah, assuming they can work something out. I don't know how deep this relationship is right now, and it doesn't seem like anyone really knows. I know Meltzer kind of like speculated on some stuff, but like there still is a pandemic. There still is a pandemic going on. And so, you know, it's tough to get people in and out. There's Japan like takes that serious, unlike the US. So they will actually quarantine for 14 days and whatnot. And it's going to be tough for New Japan to like want people off their shows for 14 days and everything. So it depends on how like it works out. And then once the pandemic is over, how much further is this going to stretch, you know? Cause it seems like it was the thing of, all right, we got to do this Moxley Kenta match. We've been holding this thing off for months now. Like when are we like almost half a year? Like when are we maybe even over? When are we going to actually do this? And it seems like that was really the thing that brought it together. Like after they do this, how much more to it is this relationship? I think that's kind of my biggest question.
So the kind of elephant in the room here, and I know everyone's going to laugh, but Ring of Honor is the elephant in the room because, like, the way that New Japan will see Ring of Honor is, yes, they are not, like, a super appealing or popular partner for them right now, but, like, their relationship has generally been good outside of the MSG fiasco, right? They're not going to just, you know, if they do the things that maybe as fans we want them to do, I don't know how that bodes for the Ring of Honor deal. Maybe they don't care. I don't know. Maybe they shouldn't care. But that is a factor. It seems super logical for these two promotions to be together, though, right? It just it seems so. The exposure the New Japan guys can get, and then, you know, my mind starts racing here, Jeremy. The talent development system that AEW can get from sending guys to New Japan and vice versa. You know, being able to send Top Flight to do a World Tag League or something, or to do, you know, Best of Super Juniors maybe. And then you get into the kind of, that's just the minimal stuff. You get into like big picture. It doesn't have to be this big expanse if every week there's a cross-promotional match. Just sending one or two guys for the G1 is awesome as a fan. It's awesome. Like, I'm all for that. And perhaps the biggest piece of this all, this isn't just two promotions in different places working together. If New Japan can use Omega, they get a new top guy again. They get him back. And look, New Japan is a historic, prestigious promotion. But they'd be very happy to have Omega back as like a main event player once every few months, right? They just would. I mean, the Ibushi thing writes itself. It's big business. It makes a lot of sense. So it's exciting, man. The difficulty with doing stuff like this is it's very hard for us not to like dive into the details of like, well, who wins here and who benefits. But if you can, as a fan, just enjoy this because it is really refreshing. You know, when you see how things are going right now, the fluidity to it, It feels good, man. It's fun to watch.
Got a couple of super chats. Tim Trevor says, hi, Joe and Jeremy. Hi, the rest of my people. Tim, hope you're doing well, buddy.
Yes, Tim. Hello, Tim.
Appreciate the kind comments on my move. Hopefully that goes well. George Amin says, imagine if AJ and Balor were free agents. Yeah, AJ's not going anywhere. I don't think Balor's going anywhere either. It would be good business if they were free agents, but they aren't. And so they have who they have. And it's still like, really good who they have, like, yeah. Outside of AJ and Balor, we've got everyone, right? Like everyone, yeah, that I mean, you really need.
The thing is like, it's different fans will think different things with Bullet Club. Like some fans will always go to Balor or Devitt because that was the original, right? I would go to AJ, but it does seem like the majority of people go to Omega when they think Bullet Club. So like, I don't think they're missing. I don't think they're short on guys. Basically, is what I'm saying. Like,
right?
Because there is a truth to like. While it isn't lacking talent, people do kind of look at the current Bullet Club in New Japan as a little bit like, it feels a little pieced together, right? With Evil, Kenta, and they're like, everyone loves Jay White, but it doesn't feel as organic. So I think that's another win for New Japan. You think, I mean, we all knew they were going to book Gallows and Anderson anyway, right? But if they can like rejuvenate Bullet Club, because it's now become very much like placeholder foreign villain guys. Well, not even foreign in this case, but there you go. If you can add, you know, some familiar faces to that, that doesn't hurt either. It's just good for all involved. It makes so much sense. It's dumb it took this long, to be honest.
So do you think it goes past, like, kind of this Bullet Club stuff? I mean, you mentioned Suzuki against Kingston. Like, do you think there is more to it than just, hey, here's Kenta, maybe some other Bullet Club guys will appear? Obviously, we know AEW talent can go to New Japan. Certainly, some AEW talent can go to New Japan. Like, do you think we're going to see more New Japan talent come to AEW now?
Yeah, I do. I just think it's too good a fit. I also think it helps both promotions when it comes to, like, bidding wars. Because while it's cool to be able to say to a John Moxley, you can work Japan, go and sort that deal out for yourself, you can work it. Dude, if you can start negotiating with talent together, And I mean, it's a pretty lucrative deal you're looking at that if you want to be a full, as close to full time as you can be in both, you know, because the truth is at this point in AEW's progression, dude, they can easily write guys off of TV for a month and then into a long tour in Japan. They have 80 guys. They're fine. They can fill their TV time easily. So I think you're going to see baby steps. I think when things get back to normal, which, you know, whenever, I think you're going to see guys in tours. I think you're going to see, like, a logical one to me is tag teams in World Tag League.
Oh,
that just seems like that tournament in terms of Western eyes is always like a downswing for New Japan. Throw in like give me a team who's never worked, like Santana and Ortiz, for example, they're not even doing really much with. It gives something to it, right? Me as a fan, I'll be more interested in watching it. So I think it makes too much sense to be just like a one off thing to me. Anyway, there you go.
Man Antonio says, inject Omega versus Shingo into my veins. I mean, that would roll.
Shingo's the guy that you'd be like, if you were Tony Khan, he'd be the guy you'd say, could you give me like a few months of just like TV dates for Shingo? Like, you can just slot him in on Dynamite and do like 10-minute openers. He's spectacular, right? He's amazing.
Yeah, that would be great. I think we're going to see more of it as it opens up as well. I'm very weary of things right now because of the pandemic. I don't know how many guys are going to be coming and going because you just don't want too many people on flights and everything. But yeah, if you can get a couple guys for some shows, and this will probably be more of a New Japan thing because, like you said, they've got a bunch of guys. They're doing tours. As long as they're not going to lose like main guys, they'll probably be okay. And the same thing with AEW. I think it'd be great whenever they do. I mean, they have New Japan Cup coming up. Mm-hmm. I know Colt Cabana was supposed to work that last year. Maybe someone gets sent over for New Japan Cup on that. Like, they can afford to lose a couple of guys off the TV show for that month, 2 months. And yeah, World Tag League, Best of Super Juniors, any of that stuff. Anybody you feel like you can afford to lose for that, send them over there and just let them have that run for a couple of months.
There's one element to this that may seem slightly sinister, so I will approach it with caution. However, this network that's being built here almost of like internal relationships, right, which is what's happening. I mean, we spoke about it before. As soon as Gallows and Anderson signed with Impact, they effectively had like a weird agreement with New Japan, which I don't think New Japan was happy about, but that's life. That's what it is. And it's obviously advanced because like Rocky, I guess, has brought in like Chris Bay and stuff. So this kind of branching network, it does make me wonder how much longer a guy like Tony Khan wants to pay 80 full-time contracted wrestlers. Because if you're getting to a point where you can borrow and share talent for your television show that is better talent, I wonder long. I know Tony Khan has prided himself on the fact they haven't cut anyone, but I do wonder the implication, because let's be honest, they haven't got enough time for the guys they have now, right? They haven't. It does intrigue me that. I mean, if you get to a point where it's like, we're in such good terms with Impact now that we're using Deonna Purrazzo on TV, we're using Kiera Hogan and Tasha Steelz on TV. It's like, at what point then does he look at those books and be like, okay, maybe we don't need, I'm going to name anyone, maybe we don't need this person in the middle of the women's division. That part of it is the only downside I can personally see to a major kind of industry-wide agreement like this, is perhaps the promoters can start kind of leaning on the sharing more than full-time contracts. That's just one little thought that passed my mind.
That's a good point because, like you said, they don't have enough time for even the people that they have right now. Like, they're cycling guys in and off TV right now. Like, remember somebody like Scorpio Sky, like the first few months of television, this guy was supposed to be like the big thing, the big breakout star and whatnot. And like, he's not even on TV. Like, I don't know what Scorpio Sky's doing. He did the thing with Sean Spears for a little bit. And then that kind of, I think they had a blow off match, but like, it didn't feel big or it didn't feel like anything. Like, they have so much talent. And now if you're going to bring in New Japan guys, if you're going to bring in Impact guys and girls, like, it's going to be, that's even less time for the talent you already have. So it would be tough. Will they start cutting people? I don't know. I think if they do anything, they'll just make Dark like a 5-hour show. Like, that's probably.
Yeah, it's close enough as it is. I mean, so I guess they're adding a second show at some point in the next 10
years. Just an hour long.
Yeah. So it is intriguing in the sense that, like, it's clear that one of their ways of solving it has been grouping everyone together, right? Like, it's a smart idea. If you put people in groups, they get TV time without having to wrestle matches and stuff. But I do wonder if eventually, it probably won't be cuts, but I assume there'll be some guys that when their first contracts come up, you know, they'll just go their separate ways. Because Again, I do not need to name anyone. I'd imagine you could put the names together in your head. There have been some guys that have been there since the start that, like, they probably don't need to be there. That's the way wrestling works. That's the way any sport entertainment works. So we'll see how that goes. But as a fan, doesn't have to worry about such things. It's pretty glorious to end a TV show with that genuine feel of, you know, we go through all the details. Was this a good match? Was it a good promo? A good angle? A good direction? All this nonsense. The biggest strength Dynamite has right now is you actually feel like anything can happen. And that is the biggest cliche in wrestling. Anything can happen. It actually feels that way, Jeremy. Like when Moxley got jumped, you could have convinced me in that second anyone was under that hood, because I'd forgotten all about the Kenta. I was just in the moment.
Oh, you know? I knew it was Kenta right away. Right. Yeah.
That's fair. I was watching at 7 a.m., so I was a little bit. Yeah, I get you. It's just, but you know what I mean though, right? The feel of it is like anyone can show up, dude. I don't know. Right. Unless they're under contract at WWE, they could be here tonight. I have no clue. It's pretty fun.
JJ says Daniels and Tanahashi is all he wants. JJ, you're looking for the distraction pop right there with our good friend Christopher Daniels, who says we're big stars and one of our favorites of all time, Hiroshi Tanahashi. Look, man, if Hiroshi Tanahashi is coming here and working Dynamite main events, like, sure. Ain't complaining about that.
I wish I could remember who did it, because I'll credit them, but there was someone who posted a screenshot of a Tanahashi press conference when Hangman was doing Japan, like he was doing New Japan tours.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, Hangman, I need to keep him because he's way too good for that Bullet Club stuff. Dude, imagine Tanahashi is the guy that Hangman finally accepts as his new friend. Imagine the content I could get from this on social and the grins I can draw. It'd just be, it's extraordinary. Tanahashi is like, the more big shows he works at this point in his career, the better. So yeah, for him on an AEW pay-per-view, a Dynamite, whatever. I'm all in on all this stuff. It sounds great.
I mean, we love the Omega and Hangman tag run. I thought that was really good what they did, I guess last year now, 2020. My years are really bad. I can imagine that, but it's Tanahashi instead of Omega. I mean, that's a 100 times upgrade. All offense to Kenny Omega, Hiroshi Tanahashi's 100 times better than him.
I don't want to get in trouble, so I'll say no comment. Speaking of such, though, inferior transition here, what do you think about... oh my goodness, they're fired up.
Dogs are going crazy. They did not like my Kenny Omega comment. They were like, how dare you? How dare you put down Kenny Omega like that?
People that watch this show will know I've been predicting the Revolution match to be the Bucks and Good Brothers for a long time, right? When I was watching the match, it wasn't surprising to me that MJF and Jericho won. Where are you at on that whole thing? Is that a weak point of Dynamite, which show I think is very good right now, or is it a strength? I'm genuinely intrigued. Where are you at on the Inner Circle shenanigans?
I like MJF. I mean, you know, I like Proud and Powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a fan of Guevara. I'm very high on Wardlow. Hager, I have no use for. Jericho right now is just kind of the miss for me. Like, his stuff just is not hitting for me right now. And like, to see him, I get why they did this match. I was kind of thinking they were going to do Bucks and Good Brothers as well. But once, I think Matt got tossed first, whichever one got tossed first last night, like once they went out that early, I was like, oh no, they're definitely not winning this match. And then once it got down to like the final six or whatever, I was like, oh, okay, it's Jericho and MJF. This just heel versus face divide. It makes the most sense to do that. The thing is, like, I know they'll do the feud because they've got still months of television. Well, I guess not. They've got another month because it's March 7th now. So they're doing like the Bullet Club feud on one side, the Inner Circle feud on the other side, and then they're going to do a Bullet Club Inner Circle feud together heading into Revolution. And I'm fine with these layers and strings and stuff, but the Inner Circle stuff, it's Jericho stuff that just isn't really hitting for me right now.
It's puzzling because I watch the individual segments and I think they're quite good. Like, I quite like the kind of unspoken element that, like, MJF is sort of manipulating things, right? Like, he kind of he gets a chance to connect with guys and he does it. So I wouldn't say it's objectively bad. I know you didn't. I'm saying I'm spitting myself. I wouldn't say that, but I just don't. It feels like the powers that be, so to speak, sees it as like a huge deal. And I haven't got the statistics. I know Tony's got his 100 spreadsheets, but it feels like the audience doesn't to me. It feels like they're still seeing Jericho in a way that I don't know if the audience still does. I submit, look, I say this much, okay? you know, the whole lion salt deal, like, in fairness to Jericho, he hits that fire 99% of the time every week, right? Like, he just does.
I do think he got tripped up by Sammy, because Sammy, like, yes, put his leg down.
Right, and every once in a while, like, you can go back to, like, I think he did it with Apollo, he did it with Hennig famously, he'll, like, just mess it up. It's just, yes, it's just, it just happens. Like, he hits it every week fine. So, physically, for whatever he looks like, he's still, like, he's okay, he's fine. He's not, you know, in some sort of terrible, terrible state. The character is the concern, I think, for you and I, of like,
yeah,
has this hit the wall now? Does it, is he actually overdue the evolution that we kind of expected a long time ago? It's been a long time, and we never got a break because he kept coming to TV, which, you know, God bless him. But it does feel like, it does feel to me anyway, like they're kind of running on the spot. There's nothing that keeps me coming back. And the one element I wanted was Santana and Ortiz, which just feels completely stalled. Every time they tease, they're going somewhere with it, they go nowhere. You know, I thought maybe the Lumberjack was a way to get them with Eddie or something. It's something interesting. At this point, I don't even want them with Eddie. I want them to be on their own. So I have no clue. That's frustrating me a little bit, I must say.
I'm super uncomfortable, by the way.
My
legs are not built for this floor-sitting life. I think so. Here's my thing with Jericho is I do think there has to be some type of next evolution. We've always praised Jericho for his character work and evolving, and it's true. Like, he's done great at that throughout his career. The issue with him in AEW is, like, he stood out in WWE because they just didn't have too many, like, layered characters like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly they did in the early 2000s and whatnot, but as things went on, it didn't happen quite as much. With an AEW, that character just doesn't stand out like before, because they have so many good people who do great character work. Like, what, Eddie Kingston compared to Chris Jericho, even in his own group. Like, I think Sammy Guevara and MJF are doing a better job than him with everything. Like, he just doesn't stand out the way he used to in WWE when he could evolve and keep doing this brilliant character work.
I kind of wonder if it's a case of, like, one of the things people like about AEW is it's this feeling that even guys you've seen elsewhere, they now have a fresh coat of paint on them, right?
Like, even they love that term in WWE, fresh coat of paint.
There you go. So, but even like Moxley, who was a certified top guy in WWE, it always feels like in AEW he's being the main event star he wanted to be. I almost wonder if Jericho is like a victim of his prior success, in the sense that, like, we do feel like we've seen it all at this point. And one of the beautiful things about AEW is no one else feels that way. You know, like, you mentioned Sammy and MJF, and it's like, you could be educating on MJF for a few years now. I know he's been a thing for that long, but, like, he still feels like a guy who's painting the picture in front of you, right? His legacy is ahead of him. You know, Eddie Kingston, you mentioned, he's been wrestling for 20 years, but let's be honest, in terms of history, he's probably going to be most remembered for this run that he's having right now.
Yeah.
This is just Jericho's bonus tracks, man. Like, it is what it is. He's having fun with it. I get it. But, like, it kind of feels like it's very unlikely we've got, like, Chris's character peak ahead of us, doesn't it? Like, whatever he evolves into, let's be honest, it's probably not going to be the thing we remember him for in 20 years. So I think that's a factor. I do agree with you, though, that it's perhaps, I think AEW has done a better job than people expected in terms of building other guys up, to the point where Jericho now feels like just a set, like one of the guys in the pack, rather than, you know, the guy, which seemed like a distance away only a year or so ago. So it's a credit to them, but I think they may need to adjust a little bit in how they handle Chris personally. There you go.
Jericho's next kind of evolution as a character is just going to be a guy who, and I mean, maybe this is kind of already his character, it's just a rock star who's just hanging around still. And it's like, wait, dude, this stuff has passed you by. But, like, he's still got his friends and stuff, and his friends just haven't told him that they're kicking him out of the group. And maybe that's what's coming. Somebody in the chat, Harrison Riddler, says Inner Circle turning on Jericho at Revolution. Like, maybe that's where this is going, is that Inner Circle, Sammy and MJF are, like, actually pals, and they're like, get this old dude out of here. It's time for the fresh blood or whatever. And Jericho just becomes, I don't know what he becomes, babyface, who the rock star babyface who goes off into a solo career and tries to do that. He's on SoundCloud now.
I think there's something to be said for Sammy, like, MJF gets everyone to betray Chris, which is very much on point with what they're building right now. So that was a good point. Who made it in the chat? That's what they're doing. So I like that a lot. I would probably, I know they don't need any more tag teams, but I think it would be smart to keep Sammy paired with Chris, and it makes Sammy a babyface because of how loyal he is to Jericho. You know, that, I think that'd be a nice character thing, because the thing about Sammy is the character is effectively he's just a dick. There's not like any sort of evil. There was a little bit when he tried to kill Matt Hardy once or twice, but generally he's just a dick. So if you show that he's loyal to his sort of on-screen father, Chris Jericho, I think there's something to that. But I will say, we've spoken about this for long enough, so quickly before we move on to the Royal Rumble, Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa was pretty damn good, right? Strong match.
Yeah, very good. I'm glad they got time. Britt's improved so much over the last year. Yeah. Like, she's exceptional. And Thunder Rosa's always been good. She's just been in an NWA Power studio, and so not everyone has seen it. But she's certainly been highlighted in AEW. I'm looking forward to that women's tournament. Like, I'm not gonna be like, I know who every single woman on the Japanese side is. I don't. But just some of the tweets I saw from some of them were fun. And I think it's gonna be good. So I'm looking forward to that tournament. And you know, they're doing half of it in Japan, half of it in the US, and it's gonna open it up to more audiences. And this is another thing of, you know, AEW's working with anybody. They're working mm-hmm. with the Japanese the Joshi promotions over there. So it's good.
It's one thing I will say is, you know, when they did the US side of the bracket, credit to them in the sense that like it now does feel like they have a group that I know a lot about each of them, right? Because there were some women they left out of that bracket, that side of the bracket, that I've seen on Dynamite. So it's actually kind of done a full 180 for me now, where I think they actually have like relative depth. I actually know like a solid amount of the women well enough. They now need to really polish the top tier and make the title scene seem like it's the equal to the men's title scene. Now, in fairness, I'm not here to do comparisons and stuff, okay? I'm not saying the other side does that or doesn't do that. What I'm saying is this is what AEW should strive to do. Britt, Thunder Rosa, Shida, these top women, Serena Deeb in ring two. You need to strive to get them to a point where they can main event any TV. That's what you need to get. Depth-wise, I actually think they're kind of fine. They just need to get that top tier ready. You know, it's interesting.
Before we move on to the Royal Rumble, Drew Nicholas sends a chat, super chat says, New Japan on the Roku channel is super intriguing to someone like me who's been wanting to get in New Japan for the longest time. Super hyped. Joseph, do you have any thoughts on New Japan on the Roku?
I'm completely uneducated on the platform. I mean, I've informed that it's also the way for me. It's going to be here on the Roku. I don't even know what the Roku is. God bless the Roku. It sounds fun, but I don't know what it is. But it's cool because the thing is a lot of fans are very, very like trained mentally to see wrestling as like a weekly show. It's a weekly block. And when you try to put it into New Japan, that is a huge stumbling block. Like, okay, so when are the in-ring promos and wedding segments? And it's like, well, it's difficult. Road twos. No, but a weekly show allows people to do it. So I hope someone like Drew can just slot that time in and learn the cast of characters and then eventually fall in love with the product. I mean, I'm not as in on New Japan as I used to be. I will say that Shingo and Tanahashi was like, I mean, you know, it was magic, right?
Yeah.
Of course it was great, but it's cool. It's cool. And any kind of exposure for that brand is neat. It's fun.
I think they did themselves a disservice by like even trying to hype this as something. That it feels like something that, all right, if you've struck the deal, just like announce it when you have it struck. Don't just be like 10 a.m. this is when we're announcing it, and then like get people like the anticipation and then be like, we're on Roku, because I'm pretty sure you have to have a Roku player to actually get the channel. And like, I have one. I've never watched the Roku channel. I don't know what's on that channel. I didn't even know there was like an on-demand service on the Roku. I don't even think New Japan World is available on the Roku. It's available on the Amazon Fire Stick. Maybe they should have gone over to Amazon Prime, but I know it's available there. I don't think it hurts. It's not a thing that hurts them, you know, but it's also not a thing that I don't think it's going to get them to like too many new eyeballs or anything like that. Cause I just don't know how many people have the Roku channel and watch the Roku channel and are going to watch, Thursdays at 5 o'clock, this New Japan highlight show.
It's that old, I mean, in fear of dating myself here, it's that old Ring of Honor debate of like, we need television. And it's like 10 years of television. And like, well, you know, at some point your audience, it's in America, their audience probably just is what it is. It probably is, unfortunately, for better or worse. That's fine. you have to just cater to that audience. You know, unless you're getting a sort of massive TV deal, I don't think it's going to change because you're on the Roku channel, right? It's like, it just is what it is. But it still hopefully makes them some money. God bless.
People in the chat are clarifying that you don't actually need a Roku to
take that, Jeremy. Channel.
Sorry, I don't know. I didn't know anything about the Roku channel despite having a little Roku, little player thing. I don't watch it.
If one more person in the world can see Hiroshi Tanahashi's beautiful eyes, I'm fine with the Roku channel, whatever it takes.
Hopefully it works out. And like you said, if it draws just a couple new eyeballs, then and they sign up for New Japan World, cool, good on them.
Yeah, that's it. There's no need to complicate it more than that, right? It is right.
What it is. WWE Royal Rumble, Joseph. We did a 5-hour preview show. We actually spent 20 minutes. At least talking about Edge, and then you messaged me and said, why'd we spend 20 minutes talking about Edge? He's not going to win ever. That was a legit message that you sent me. It's like, that was a waste of time. Edge is never going to win. And then Edge won, Joseph.
I was at like 4 a.m, I was shopping for my betting slips like, huh? Edge? Why Edge? I don't know. No, we spoke about this a little bit on the Twitch. You can join us on the Twitch. Twitch.tv/FightfulGaming.
There you go.
3 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesdays, folks. And we were talking about a little bit, and here's my actual take. So first things first, full disclosure, I'm not like a huge, oh my God, it's Edge guy. I'm just not. Okay, that's life is what it is. You'll like some people I don't, and vice versa. However, Jeremy and I concluded, being the objective smart gentleman that we are, that as people that were pro Daniel Bryan as a WrestleMania opponent for Reigns, because he's a big match, can have a great match with Reigns, and doesn't need to win. It would be a little bit silly for me to come on here and say, Edge, who needs him? He ticks all the same boxes. It's absolutely fine. There's a great story to tell. I have one key I'm asking for. Can we have Roman win this match, please? I get it. I understand. Roman needs to win, and Edge needs to be driven to insanity by that result and turn heel. That's my take. I don't think this is the time for Edge to beat Roman. That's just me. But the match, cool, man. I'm happy for Edge. It's fun.
I don't have an issue with Edge because he is working full-time. I mean, he was planning on working full-time before the injury, and he was at
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Television every week. It's not like it was like a long run or anything, but he was there just about every week. So it's not like a part-timer coming back and then just doing it. Like, the dude went an hour in the Rumble. The same Goldberg getting blown up 2 minutes walking down the ramp. Like, he was there. He worked his ass off in the Rumble and then worked the next night against Orton. So I don't have an issue with Edge winning despite his age, because at least he feels fresh, even if maybe he's not, and they could have used this to position someone a little bit better. And there are plenty of stories to tell as well. I like what they're doing of show up on Raw, show up on NXT, show up on SmackDown. Like, let it drag a little bit. And he was on After the Bell today talking about his potential choices. And he gave the story of, like, this is why it works for all three of these guys. And so I could pick any of them, and we're going to make this work. Edge, like, when we were doing this show last year, and I told you I listened to, like, all these Edge interviews before the Mania match, and I was like, oh, they're gonna kill this. They're gonna make this work. I have so much faith in Edge, all these things he's saying. And now, like, I'm almost second guessing when he does these interviews. Like, all right, I understand there's a story with Drew. I'm not trusting you again, Adam Copeland, after you sold me a bill of goods last WrestleMania, and then you gave me that walk-in brawl match against Randy Orton. But there's a story for all of this. I think whoever he chooses, it seems like, based on reports, spoilers, everybody, like, mute your mic for a second or mute the audio for a second. It seems like it's going to be Roman Reigns. If that's the case, I'm with you. Just have Roman win. Like, do not do this whole thing and then have Edge be the guy to take the belt from Roman, because Edge doesn't need that rub. Like, whoever beats Roman, it should be a guy where, like, this dude is now 100% made.
Yeah, I agree. I do see, like, I could see them doing the deal where Edge wins it and then drops it back. And it wouldn't make me, like, angry. I'm not, you know, I'm too old to be getting angry about any of this stuff. But it would, to me, lessen the eventual hit of when Roman actually loses it properly. You know, so yeah. I'm with you 100%. We have a lot of fun with the Edge interview stuff on here. I like when he talks like a thespian and such. It's very funny. But in all seriousness, he's a very smart guy. And he does a wonderful job of coming up with cool narratives and plot points for his programs. Like, his promos, he's not a guy, this is not an insult, I promise. Some guys are great promos in that you can have them talk about anything and they're just great promos. Edge is kind of that, but what actually makes Edge a great promo is he thinks about what he's going to say. You can tell he really sits down and he's going, what's the interesting contrast between our two characters? What's the conflict here? And that's a beautiful thing. It makes the product better. So I've no issue with it. I do think the match itself at the Rumble was pretty, you know, middle of the road for a Rumble match. But that was, the blow of that was lessened by the fact the Women's Rumble, I thought, was very fun. So, which obviously we'll talk about in a second. So, I mean, the Rumble overall was a success for them, I would say. You know, I get it's caused some controversy because of age and all this stuff, but I think overall it was a good enough show. It was fun.
With Edge, what did you think of his, I mean, let's address the Andre Drummond size elephant in the room here. What did you think of Drew McIntyre?
I'm done with it. I have no clue. I have no clue. Anyone still finds it interesting? I don't get it. Like, it's not that he's bad. There are a few roles in wrestling harder than being top guy for WWE when you're sent out there to do 10-minute monologues and have long matches all the time. It's difficult. He does it all well enough. I'm not knocking the guy. There's just no flair to any of it. It's just...
You got a sword, Joseph!
I know, but that's the thing. It all feels so, like... It doesn't feel authentic to me. I don't know. Maybe this is an anti-Scottish bias coming out on the podcast. I don't know. People seem to love him, so God bless. But to me, I thought that promo segment was, like... Just I have no clue why someone said that was a good idea, unless he's turning heel and wrestling Edge. I have no idea.
The Edge promo where he, like, effectively just said everything you've said about Drew McIntyre on this show. I mean, I'm sure Edge is a watcher and listener of this show, so he probably just saw this. He saw what you said. And he's like, it's good stuff. Let me craft this into WWE style, and let me go out there and just say this. I thought it was a great promo by Edge. True backstage on the verge of tears. Who thought this was a good idea?
Bad. It's bad.
Who thought this was a good idea?
He's not got the range for that.
No.
This is where I don't get why they, like, have to do everything live. Couldn't they just take that 5 in the evening and be like, oh, that's bad. Let's not do that. Just have him be aggressive. You know, old school studio style. Look down the camera, get fired up. Don't be crying at me, Drew. I don't need you crying. Did you not find the Sheamus thing felt like... It was like the on-screen example of someone has just said they're working Mania against Drew. Sheamus now has to do his program right now. Like, it was so sudden and abrupt, which is what they'll have a good match. I think Sheamus is just like, he's so good at WWE TV.
Yeah.
He hits every segment they give him. He nails it. His matches are always good. He's a master of that. anyone who's in NXT right now that's inexplicably listens to the Distraction podcast and wants to be a WWF main roster superstar should be talking to the Sheamus because he's brilliant at it. So I'm happy. I'm excited for their match. He just feels to me, and he's not alone in this regard. A lot of guys feel victim to it. He feels like a really good Intercontinental champion that is inexplicably presented to me as the WWF champion. I don't get it. It's not, you know, it's just not my deal anymore. Especially now, it seems like it's hit the wall dramatically at this point. So there's me.
I thought they telegraphed the Sheamus thing too, because they did the tight shot on Drew, and it's like, oh, Sheamus is about to kick him. Like you can, yes. You can tell the WWE production tricks when it comes to this stuff, and that was one of them. I think the Sheamus, just put the title on Sheamus. Who cares?
I'm with you, man. Like, what is the title match right now for Raw?
For Mania?
Yeah.
Right now, they don't have anything if it's not Edge.
Like, I mean, like, you're speculating, you know?
Oh, Christian?
Oh, man, Edge and Christian rule the world.
And then, you know what? Edge is the Universal Champion. Christian is the World Champion. And then they go and they beat the Hurt Business. And then they beat the Dirty Dogs. They get the tag team titles.
Twitter seems to be up for this. I'm fine with it. I mean, I just... It's a strange thing Raw has got going on where it's like, it seems pretty obvious that Randy and Bray, it's not even a feud. Can we even say Bray's in a feud at this point? He's not been on TV for like 3 years.
Dude, Bray is just...
A god. Yeah.
This man amazing. Ain't showing up television, still gets everybody to talk about him every week. He's got Alexa oozing from the mouth now, and it's just tremendous stuff.
I'm imagining like at the Rumble, Alexa called him Bray and being like, they say if you come here, we're both winning the Rumble. Can you just come to the Rumble? And he's like, nah. He's like, I got burnt alive a month ago. Just let me map this out. I'm getting there eventually. I'll see you next year. Okay? I'll be there. It seems obvious to me that whatever that is, internally, they see that as the main thing of Raw. This is my take on it, okay? You may think I'm wrong. That's what it seems like to me. Yeah. So it's like, that's fine. That happens all the time in wrestling. The non-title stuff is bigger. But when it's something that's so absurd and outlandish, it really doesn't help poor Drew, who's talking about respect, honor, and dignity in the opening seg. It's difficult. It's a difficult job. So I don't know where they're going. I know, obviously, Keith Lee's kind of looming now because of his recent absence, so all the best to him. But I assume he should be involved. I don't really know. Raw's kind of a mess. And let's be honest, we're about to talk about the women's match, I assume. The Raw women's title picture is no less complicated. In fact, it's a whole lot more complicated. So we'll get to that. There you go.
Do you have any thoughts on Christian's return?
I like the Christian. He looked very well. I'm happy for him. I have no idea how you use him as like a part-time singles because he's not like a mega star. Even though I love Christian, I think he's better than Edge. I'm one of those guys. I think Jeremy is too.
Me too, yeah.
So, but he's difficult to use as a part-timer because he's not like, you know, 15-time champ Christian, right? Like he's Christian. So that's fun. The big thing to me is Edge and Christian should so be a team. Sooner than later, like the Usos versus Edge and Christian is an actual dream match. Yeah. New Day versus Edge and Christian is an actual dream match. Like these are main event matches. So that's the big thing to me. I hope we get that. I'm really happy for Christian, whose career ended abruptly and he never got the kind of adulation he deserved. But as far as moving forward, it's difficult where you fit him in. You mentioned to me an AJ match at Mania, which I'm for. I don't know what else AJ would be doing. It seems Brian's going to work Seth from what I can, you know, kind of put together in my head. So that's fine. Wherever you can fit him in, he's a great pro wrestler. I'm not going to argue about it, but it isn't like one of those ones where it's like, oh my, let me get on my list of blockbuster main event matches for Christian. Like, he's not that guy. It's not his fault. He just isn't.
Music and Moonsaults says the babyface territory is woefully bad at developing babyfaces.
Yeah, it's long gone. That is now. I think that died with like when Triple H started dressing up as Ric Flair in the mid 2000s. I mean, that was the end of the babyface.
They should put the title on the Bad Bunny.
Sure. He does good Instagram numbers, I'm told. That's my only argument for Bray Wyatt. I don't know why else you'd do it.
He has good YouTube numbers. He was the most watched YouTube video from the Royal Rumble.
Who, Bad Bunny, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, I was very confusing about the thing Bray Wyatt's presence in the Royal Rumble. Yeah, of course. He's a big star, Jeremy. I don't know if you've seen. There's been a debate about it on social media this week. He's a big star.
Let's go to the Women's Royal Rumble. Bianca Belair won the Women's Royal Rumble. I think everything that the Men's Royal Rumble got wrong, this got right. As far as Bianca and Rhea were the final two, that's who they pretty much everyone kind of picked. If they weren't picking Bianca, they were picking Rhea. If they weren't picking Rhea, they were picking Bianca. So I was very happy to see those two as the final two. Bianca winning, totally fine by me. Just massive, massive star potential with her. Just don't screw it up.
They're both so good, man. They're both like game changer, once in generation type talents, and they've got them at once here. It's exciting. I'm fired up for it. I predicted Rhea to win last week. I'm pretty sure it was my official on a 4-hour show. That was my official prediction. And because the reason I said to you was I thought Bayley and Blair would go on to Mania and then Rhea could slot in against Sasha. Now that you've switched it, it would seem very logical to me that Rhea works Bayley at WrestleMania. So I think Rhea can still be factored in here in a really positive way. So that's cool. I mean, Banks and Blair it's a money program. I'm slightly concerned about their kind of willingness to go shades of grey with the Sasha Banks character. Like, I don't want it to be... I like that Bianca Belair has become a fully fledged like babyface. You know, I like that she's like an authentic, lovable babyface. And I don't want them to kind of muddy those waters with some weird, like, mixed message feud. I almost will be in on Banks just being the heel for this feud, because that character can be a heel in, like, individual interactions. So I don't know, it's gonna be interesting to play that, but the match itself will be great. And like, it's awesome. This is why I like wrestling personally, is when you see talent getting given that faith to have that push, right, that fans think they have, and then actually getting put in the position and then building up the credit to stay there. It has become this is an industry-wide problem. I'm not trying to do anything different here. It does sometimes feel like these things are so long overdue. You can even argue Belair is, but I would say, like, generally, it feels like they've actually hit this on point. She's going to WrestleMania. Let's be excited about it. It's a fresh face. Long, long overdue, in my opinion. I'm very excited for it.
I think with Banks and Belair, you do this story one of two ways. The one is, like, you just turn Sasha heel again. I realize, like, she just turned face a few months ago when Bayley turned on her. But, like, that character still has so many heel tendencies that makes her a little bit unlikable, to where it'd be very easy to just go that full route. The other way is just go about, like, sort of the respect angle and then just find out, like, who's better. Like, okay, we know Bianca is this A-plus athlete who can do anything in the ring. Sasha, I mean, she's the best worker they have, female talent-wise, even top five men's. So if you just go on that, like, all right, I'm top. I respect you. You're really great. Not your time yet. If you do kind of a thing like that, sort of still do babyface there, then it could work. But I think you mentioned that you don't want to muddy it and go two shades of gray because you're a little scared of them not being able to pull that off. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's that. So here's my deal is, I mean, we talk about Hiroshi Tanahashi a lot on this show. Do you remember when Hiroshi Tanahashi was the ace trim? He would do that deal where, like...
Still is.
Yeah, of course, but he would do that deal when he was the champ where it was like, if there was a guy against him that the audience really liked, he would just act like a bit of a dick that day. It was what had to be done for the sake of his role. Cena did it eventually, so he got really good at it, Cena. Banks doesn't have to be like a menacing, mustache-twirling heel. The promo you just did, though, could clearly make her the heel of the program, where she's like, I think you're amazing, you're extraordinary, you're the EST, all that good stuff. But like, you've got to realize there's levels here. Like, you didn't even win an NXT title. Like, you're next, maybe, but... And I almost would like if Banks was like, I'm younger than you, and look at what I've done. Look at my resume. Because the thing is, Sasha doesn't have to be a heel to be confident. She still is that confident character. So, like, let her flex about the fact that she's got all these titles. She's an all-timer. She's an absolute all-timer, a living legend, both within that company's fabric and out of it. Let her be that person. Let her be the one that kind of pulls rank, almost, dare I say, like, on it, you know, that kind of deal. I don't have faith in them doing such a, like, serious title-based program would be my concern. But if they can do it, that sounds awesome. I'm with that 100%.
Does Sasha mention Star Wars once during this feud?
Yes, absolutely. I even think you may get, like, an action figure reference. She has an action figure.
She does, yeah.
Very exciting. She'll be leaving Hollywood any moment now, I'm sure. I don't even know how they book her for TV. I'm assuming 1 week Bank will just win the title. Like, we'll never see her again. She's Star Wars now. She can no longer rest. So, no, I'm fine with that. I want the Banks character can be, like, cocky as a baby face. I just want it to feel more like real and organic. Yeah. That segment she did with Reginald was not good at all. So
I don't remember it.
She was the one where she was like kind of flirtatious and she was like, you know,
right,
prepared her. And it just, it didn't fit her. I think she's someone that her star potential is so massive and her current star is already so big. They would be well served to actually one of them. I know they've only got 400 writers on board. If one of them just tried to find her tone as an on-screen character that really captures her best, because I still don't think they've done that, and she's like one of their biggest stars. Feels like you're leaving money on the table there to me. But, you know, what do I know? I don't want to get cancelled or attacked, so I'll just say no more.
She should do her catchphrase more often. Remind everybody that she's the boss and the blueprint and the role model.
She should laugh, too. Yeah. She should do that laugh, Jeremy. She does that laugh's really good babyface shtick.
Sean on the SmackDown show, I guess it was this past week, he's like, Sasha Banks has like one of the best laughs in wrestling. And I was just like,
if she was a heel, it would be amazing.
And he's like, you don't think so? I was like, dude, when you listen to that laugh in 300 interviews a week, like it gets a little old.
It's a great like heel shtick. I used to love when Seth would do the like evil laugh, but it's just, she's a baby face. I don't know. Maybe we're just old fashioned white guys. We probably are. In fact, one more time, maybe we are old fashioned white guys. If for some reason the legit boss Sasha Banks is watching this show, please ignore us. Please do not try to appeal to us two dipshit small people. Okay, carry on doing what you're doing. It's going great.
Of course, she watches this show. She saw me do that, her entrance, and she's like, this looks like a fantastic show.
So, here's the thing, go full circle here. The feigned entrance bit that we did, where you actually like live watched the entrance that was titled like Sexy Entrance, and I was in the bunker for that very show. So, things go whenever the legit boss is around, there's a bunker soon to follow. So, there you go.
George Amin says, what are your thoughts on KO and Reigns? Well, I'm glad you asked, George, because we're going to get into the rest of the card now. Joseph, any other thoughts from the Royal Rumble?
I bummed me out. The match that George Spencer bummed me out. I loved it. It was as Mick Foley as Kevin Owens has ever felt, and that's saying something because he's been really going that way more and more as a babyface. And then the finish. And listen, as a chubby lad that's made many simple tasks seem impossible, I really related to Paulie dangerously as he fumbled with that key. It was terrifying. You could tell, you know, when someone's body language just screams, I have no clue what I'm doing? That was Paulie when he realized it was like the wrong side or whatever.
It was on the wrong side.
Oh, yeah, Paul. Good one.
Wrong side.
Incredible
why did they
use.
Have bolt cutters? Like, after the first couple of seconds, like, why did they just, they should have brought bolt cutters in the first place instead of a key. Like, why even have a
shoot
key?
Handcuffs? Why do any of this? This is like use toys or something. I don't know. Do
yeah,
something.
Use the one that you just little flip the little switch and then it just pops off. Like fine.
It would have been okay if that was a blown spot and then like I know he's not clear, but this is imagine he was. Jimmy Uso comes in. That's the finish. You would have forgotten about it. It wasn't. The finish was literally Roman gets uncarved, it does his finish, and that's the end.
Yeah,
which just it was a bummer. They deserve better. Their feud is an all time
what. What is up with handcuffs in wrestling? We have handcuffs in the Royal Rumble. Chucky T is handcuffing Miro during a wedding. The FTR got Marco Stunt in like 15 million handcuffs. Like he's not a 15-year-old child. And like, what are we doing here?
It's just an elite wrestling tool. It's like some visuals are super simple, right? And if you handcuff a babyface, you are just undeniably a dick. Like it's perfection in old school wrestling. In an old school wrestling sense. And it worked in that program. It just
but in two of these instances, we had the heels get handcuffed.
Well, that's shit. I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying it's a very useful tool, you know. By the way, I liked on I'm doing this live on air as an apparent professional. Who were the big brothers that helped the Lance Archer on Dynamite? What's their team name?
Oh, Bear Country.
Okay, so I love that all of that happened while Ed Kingston was talking trash to Billy Gunn. Legitimately eight different bumps happened. And I was watching this thinking, they could have done with some handcuffs, Jeremy. That's really what they needed in that scenario. They didn't have any. They only had three tables. So the handcuff situation was perfect for the program, which, by the way, is an all-time modern WWE title program or ever belt they were fighting over, I forget. It was great. I have no complaints. Unfortunately, sometimes stuff happens that just is completely completely unnecessary and immoral that would happen at that time. There is no need for the wrestling gods, John Bradshaw Layfield, to suddenly at that point decide, no, Paul Lee is going to get sweaty palms and forget how to undo these cuts. It was unfair on those two men who deserve better. I loved their match before that.
Joseph, do you use handcuffs in your personal life?
Not often. I'll say this much, though, Jeremy. There is, you know, recently we spoke about, like, this is how my brain works. I would have less fear going out and doing a professional wrestling promo than I would being relied on to do a task that's like that. That handcuff thing gives me, like, legit anxiety. Do you not see what I'm saying here? Like, imagine being, I know Heyman's a vet. I get it, right? And that's probably his problem, was he probably didn't overthink it. He should have probably prepared. But, like, imagine you're at the Royal Rumble and it's like, oh, like, these guys are going to go through 8 tables and then it relies on me undoing a pair of handcuffs. Seems bad. See, Paul, the sweat beads are going down Paul's head. I sympathize, man. So, no, I don't have much experience with handcuffs, thankfully. But nor did Paul Heyman. It didn't bode too well for him. So, there you go.
Anything else from the Rumble? Goldberg and Drew? What a match that was. Built on respect. Drew earned Goldberg's respect, Joseph.
It's just like the most like paint by numbers textbook sprint you'll ever see. Like it never felt like an actual sprint in the sense of, oh my God, anything can happen. It just felt like, yeah, this is what the match that Goldberg does now. This is like the safe Goldberg match, which is hilarious. For I like when he missed the spear and he hit the buckle and sold for like 3 minutes because apparently he was just out.
He missed the spear, but didn't he take the buckle like chest first instead of like diving into the post because that's how he concussed himself in Vietnam? Like that, and look, at least the man learned, okay?
He stayed there for an amount of time that you only stay there if you're legitimately hurt. That's what it seems bad. But you know, I don't want to rag on the Big Bill. Like, I think there's a place for him. We've spoken before about how much fun it was when he killed Dolph. Like, I think it's
so shorts fun were nice.
His shorts were nice, you know. I think there's something to be said for him. I just, in this role, it's just so cookie cutter now. When it first happened with Brock, it was like a new match genre for WWE in the main event slots. Now it's like, that's just the match he's doing. He has no other match he could possibly do. So it did nothing really for anyone involved. It was just a match for the sake of match for the 5 people in the world that only tune in when Goldberg wrestles that wasn't going to watch the Rumble anyway. This was their match, I guess. So whatever. I don't think that's helped Drew, by the way. Like, if you're a big Drew fan, you think I'm unfair to him. In fairness, he did just do a program with Goldberg and had COVID in the middle of it. It seems bad, you know? So Jeremy's in agony over this.
My legs. I have an 8-hour drive tomorrow. My legs cannot be bent up like this and working. Like, they're hurting right now, Joseph. They're hurting. I'm going to have to take a lot of Advil and a leave after this. I got to cover a financials call after this. I got to listen to Vince McMahon talk about the Peacock and everything. Just tough times.
You've listened to enough wrestler interviews to know you never, if you're at the wheel, you're never the one taking the pills, okay? Just remember that. Be very careful, Jeremy. But anyway, the Royal Rumble. What else happened on the Royal Rumble? Oh, I want to go ahead. What was your suggestion? Because mine's probably bad. Go ahead.
My suggestion was the Raw Women's Division.
That was mine too, Jeremy.
Okay, we're on the same page.
So, obviously, the Charlotte and Asuka thing. The tag title thing was always like, they need to figure out what this is because they're clearly going to be linked in some way at Mania. In fact, they may be linked to the next pay-per-view, dude. Like, they honestly may. So they may be wrestling each other sooner than later. That thing is an absolute state. It gives me a headache trying to figure out where they're going. I don't know how in the world you kill your champion twice. And then the next week, that character that you've got over by killing the champion goes back to wrestling the person they wrestled months ago to get over a character that you already got over. Why? What is going on? How do Asuka and Alexa wrestle twice in 2 weeks and still not feel like they're in a program? Because they're not in one. They're not even in a program. They're just two people that wrestle each other. It's insane. I don't get it. You have Naomi's back. To be quite frank, I'll say this much. Injuries suck. If they are at a point with Naomi, it's like, we need to just keep her active for a while before we do a push. A Lana tag team is fine. I legit have no problem with it. Like, do that if you want to do that.
Lana returned at the Rumble, Joseph. That was exactly the biggest news out of it.
Exactly. So do that. That's fine. That's all fine. So then that leaves you with, like, Nia and Shayna are going to be defending the tag titles. That's okay. So then you have this cloud hovering over things, and I'm sure people view that as Alexa, but it's Lacey Evans, dude. Because this thing has not got a long time to wrap up. This is probably going to be going for a little while longer. Are we actually legitimately going to a Charlotte Flair Lacey Evans title match at WrestleMania? Because it feels like we could be.
I didn't even think about that. That's scary. I did see Rick's promo afterwards, and oh man, why'd you do that to me, Joseph?
It's because they have 2 months, and they are all in on that program.
Why? Right? Why'd you do this to me? My last day in North Carolina.
Just mean, man. That's what I do. Because if you think about it like this, okay, if Lacey becomes champ and then Charlotte beats her for the belt, you do know that like they internally would see that as like she's vanquishing the past, you know, like she's going to be her own person now. This is her 18th title reign. Now she's starting her own track.
Even though Rick says in every interview, like, I'm Charlotte Flair's dad, like, it's not.
Yeah,
Charlotte Flair is my daughter. Like,
so
the dog's not happy about the Charlotte Flair dog.
Shouldn't be. I mean, I kind of expect my guess would be that's your title match. I'm sorry, guys. I know. And I think you'll get a cinematic match between Killer Clown Alexa and Killer Clown Asuka at the circus. Yep.
Joseph.
Jeremy, this would be really nice here and be kind, okay? What's the best thing we could come up with? We just got given the pencil.
I thought it was just going to be a Charlotte and Asuka match. I thought that they would do, like, Charlotte vanquishes Lacey at one of Fastlane, Elimination Chamber, whatever one of these mid pay-per-views are. And then we just go to Charlotte and Asuka at WrestleMania. And then they look at that as, all right, now we've got Asuka back on track. Like, all right, she lost all these matches and whatnot, but she's facing Charlotte now. So she's a legit threat again because she's facing Charlotte. And then Charlotte just beats her at Mania. Or Asuka wins at Mania, and then it further establishes her. Like, look, she's all the way back, and then she like loses the next month to Alexa or something.
I mean, match quality wise, and just overall, that's obviously better than Lacey, right? But like, it isn't good, is it? Because they've done so much damage to Asuka, bless her.
All right, Joseph, I'm gonna get through a couple of super chats here.
Okay.
Doink return confirmed. Doink Fiend 30-minute classic. This is essentially what you're pitching. We did Doink and Fiend on the Tuesday show in a Fire Pro simulation. That's Alexa and Asuka. That's Doink and the Fiend.
It's good. That's what you're telling me.
It was a 5-star match. I guess, you know what? You're right. It was a 5-star match. So it's going to go 27 minutes in the clown, in the circus, the 3-ring circus. And everyone's going to love it. There's the Twitter threads, the Reddit threads from this match that'll come out. It's going to be labeled as a classic.
I could say, here's the deal. If you erase Lacey from this, which I've tried many times, doesn't ever work. You do that, I could see a world in which you do Charlotte and Asuka on opposing sides, and it's a triple threat with Alexa as kind of like the, what would be the phrase? The puppet master. You know, she's actually turning them against each other because she's a killer clown. And that sounds okay. I wouldn't mind that. But, you know, it depends if this black stuff's going to keep coming out of her mouth. Because in that case, I don't know if she can be working matches. The Athletic Commission might be able to clear her. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot going on there, Jeremy. I don't know, man. She got RKO'd. There's no follow-up. Randy Orton hasn't got burn marks on his face.
What do you mean there was no follow-up? They walked past each other on the ramp, and they gave each other, like, a little glance. Like, hey, no, I know you shot me with a fireball. I know you hit me with an RKO. What's up? Good luck in your match against Edge.
I was watching that match.
Congrats on your win against Nikki Cross.
I was watching the match for Nikki Cross, and I was like, would it be a bad thing if Alexa just killed off the Nikki Cross character and she just like went to like NXT UK and we all just pretended she came back in 3 years? Like, would it at this point, would that be worse than what she's doing out of interest? Because to me, if I was Nikki Cross, I'd be like, can Alexa kill me? That's what I would say. I'd put my hand up and say, hello, can she do that Bray Wyatt move where you spin the neck and the other person dies for a second? Can I do that? Can it actually kill me?
Just get the Finn Balor out of it. Like,
yes.
do the neck snap, and then she just appears on NXT and she's crazy Nikki Cross again.
Yes.
And we all remember why we actually like Nikki Cross and love Nikki Cross. And people, when she's in NXT, are like, man, they had Nikki Cross up there. Why didn't they do this with her on the main roster?
Hang on. In fairness, the Ember Moon run tells me we shouldn't be that jealous. Hopper H don't need that kind of love on this pod, man. No. She would go back there, do like one cool promo, and then be forgotten.
Ember Moon didn't get killed by the clown, though.
She should. She should be asking to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
This run is going so badly, I'll go back up, get killed, and come back down again. That's what I'll do.
That's what I'm saying. Ember Moon didn't, though. Yeah, I mean, yeah, this NXT run hasn't been going well. But she just returned from injury. That's not a big a deal as getting killed by a female.
True. Yeah, you're right. Clown. I mean, here's the point, Jeremy. Okay, go ahead.
Super. I was just going to, Music Man's saying good luck on my move. I didn't know if we were moving on. But thank you.
I have one last point, but okay. the point of that is also correct. Yes, it is somewhat more important than the women's Raw division, the Raw women's division. So they have to have. Do they? Here's a genuine question. Do they know what the WrestleMania match is for that title yet?
No, 100%.
I agree. Because the fact that they.
Charlotte's in it. That's all they know.
Yes, every year. And the fact that they did another election match on Monday means that like they're not sure if she's actually in that or not. They just want to just keep it like maybe we need Alexa, maybe not. Maybe she's just the woman that's with the Fiend Bray Wyatt. Maybe she's like the most dominant force in the division. Who knows? Depends what day I wake up, I guess, right? I mean, it's just. It's something else, mate. It's pretty bad. I wish we could talk about more positive things on Raw, but even though this week's show I thought was okay and pretty good, there ain't a lot of interesting stuff on that show. It's just not, unfortunately. It is what it is.
Anything else overall in the world of wrestling, Joseph?
What about Gallows becoming like six-man king? These last two six-mans have been extraordinary matches, right?
He won. He got the pinfall and everything. The man gets banned from TNT for doing smoking drugs and doing jerk off motions, but you know, what can you do?
That's the man right there. That's the guy.
Gallows, he rule. It's sad that he died in our universe because perfect terrible. For booty pro wrestling.
It's terrible. I mean, we love the Gallows. It is funny though. Like, I get why it's a meme, a joke. But it does show you how great modern pro wrestlers are in ring. That Gallows, like people talk about Gallows like he's like an albatross. He's like, you watch him in these matches and he's completely fine. Like he's absolutely fine. Some of his stuff looks good. He was there working with Phoenix and it looked great. Like it just amazes me how far. Once upon a time, Jeremy, there were actual like shit pro wrestlers in these matches that just couldn't do anything. It was a much more fun time when guns and knives were involved. Nowadays, someone like Gallows is just perfectly fine. It's like, oh, get him out of there. He sucks. I don't get it. But he's having a hell of a time. The six-man tag is, like, such a useful tool for them. It's a reminder of what WWE had when they had the Shield. And yeah. Any given week, they could be like, we have a great main event this week because it's the Shield versus three guys. Dude, you can do that stuff. If you ever got, especially in fairness to him, Omega is obviously great at, like, layout and stuff for the certified great match community. And he's, like, those matches always hit. They're just tremendous. So,
yeah,
that was fun. That's the last thought. The big LG, Doc Gallows. There you go.
Joseph, would you like me to open the forbidden door?
I'm going to say yes, but I am absolutely terrified as to the bit that awaits me. Yes, Jeremy, I would.
Let me position my camera here. No. There we go. Let me get out of the way. We're going to open the forbidden door, everyone. Everyone tweet this. The forbidden door is going to be open. Hopefully people can see it. Let me actually... There we go.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I know...
Yeah.
Let me remove the banner here. A lot of thought went into this, Joseph.
Oh, no. Okay. Okay. I assume it's not Kenta is what I'm going to guess. That's my guess.
It's not Kenta. You don't know that, though. You don't know Jay that, Joseph. White. I can't see. So here we go. We're going to open the forbidden door. It's Sting! And me!
Sting at your feet!
Yeah.
My God, it's Sting! Oh my goodness gracious.
Oh, Sting fell.
Oh man. Sting took that bump he took off the stage that time. Remember that? On fire. Now it's just your crotch. Look, that's very exciting.
We're wearing the same shirts. I can't really get the shot here. It's the same.
You look like a lunatic. The forbidden door should stay closed forever.
We're going to go back in the forbidden door. It's Sting, everybody.
No, Sting is a mere bridge to the real pop there. You know that. I mean, we all love Stang. He's a hoodlum and all. We love Stang, but no, that's different. That's a different thing altogether. The shot of you trying to position yourself next to your own human form was incredible.
Well,
it gets more crazy every week, folks. The hits don't stop coming, do they? They just keep going.
This is the last time I'm going to be in this distraction office, Joseph. This is the end of the North Carolina distraction office. We're moving to the Ohio distraction office now.
Greatest moment in this territory, in your opinion, from the distraction to today. What do you say is the highlight?
Oh, man. Oh, look, it's the first take show. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's the first stage show. There's still Dr. Pepper stains on the wall from where I spit that out. It's definitely the first stage show from this territory.
Amazing. An amazing fiasco that was. We both came on and then like inexplicably got nervous as we were doing it. It just an incredible scene. It was amazing. That was great fun.
Minnie, I took a bump over there in the corner that no one can see.
That was the most ill-fated, short-sighted move you've ever made on the show. You took a butt and all the people could really hear was just, they just heard a noise like a fud, and it just, you sort of slowly dropping. It was the least impressive thing ever.
Hey, the gif is very fun because I just like fall off screen. It's like, what happened to this man?
It's the equivalent of when you were going to do the Bob's Arse, not Bob O'Neill, Bob Lashley, the Bob's Arse bit, and then like Tank saved you from it literally just being your ass. Like, it's that. You just have an idea. It's like, it's as blunt and as direct as that. That's it. It's tremendous. And then I love it.
That bit got ruined because the camera, we had WWE production, the camera missed the initial shot, so I had to do it again.
Yeah, that was it. And also another all-time moment from that particular scene, Lufa, right? That was from there. You know, that was a glorious occasion. Lufa, by the way, AEW Dynamite star Lufa.
Yeah.
Hangman and Hardy ducked him so bad. Did you notice that? They were just like, Serpentico, get him out. He's the original Death Dealer.
Hangman literally ducked him. Luther's trying to do a cannonball off the apron, and Hangman just moved out of the way. The look he gave the camera after that was so tremendous.
There was a distinct Nitro feel to that show, wasn't there, last night? I loved it. It was glorious. I mean, the wrestling is obviously, it's better because like 60% of WCW roster back then didn't care. But there was a very Nitro, like the way that it went up, this is what they did in one fell swoop, okay? They went wedding, Shaq promo, Ed Kingston lumberjack match. Like that. Boom. I was like, man, Ed's following a lot of shit. I don't think he's ever followed a Shaq promo. I'm going to be honest. By the way, Shaq stole the Judas effect too, without knowing. That's one last thing, actually, Jeremy. That is a point. We kind of discovered together that the All-Star game would stop Shaq, right?
Yeah.
Is it just me or is that not a way better fit anyway? TNT, that's where like that audience is.
Yeah.
They don't want to buy a pay-per-view, right? That's much better.
Right. I understand you want to try to like sell a pay-per-view around Shaq and everything. I feel like any AEW show is just going to do like their 100,000 and like Shaq ain't adding like 10,000 or whatever to this show. Like he ain't boosting the buy rate that much. So yeah, put it on TNT, pop the rating for that week, do a bunch of NBA crossover. If possible, I guess it's not because the AEW guys will be wrestling that night. I was going to say, like, send an AEW guy who's not wrestling, send him to the All-Star game. Like, do something with that.
Yeah. Cody might not be wrestling now because
Cody might not have that show. Like, have Cody appear on the All-Star game that Sunday.
It makes so much more sense to me because, let's be honest, it's a publicity stunt. That's just what these things are. Like,
yeah.
The audience that's got a vague interest in Shaq is so much more likely to tune into TNT than they are to pay $50 for a pay-per-view. Like, it just is what it is, or whatever the price is, you know? So I thought that was a point, and we kind of figured out amongst each other, which was impressive. We actually hit on one during a very, very exciting time. But other than that, the big news is a territory is dying here. Jeremy's moving on, new booking office, new baby faces and heels to get over, new bits to establish, exciting times. Everyone go and wish Jeremy well. That's that, the distraction. God bless.
I think it'll take a while. Music and Moonsault says, I hope this move turns out better than when Jim Crockett moved their office to Dallas. Let's hope, God willing.
Yeah, that was really, I mean, you got to say, good brother there has taken my bit and like made it infinitely better by giving an actual example. Yes, very good. Let's hope it does go better than that.
I think it'll take it a while to establish a new territory. Give me like 6 months or so. We're gonna be cooking with oil in the new territory, Joseph. Joseph, anything to plug?
I never have anything to plug at this point. I mean, at this
you wrote a Sammy Joe piece?
Oh, I did do that. Yes. Yeah, so new series, because I'm told that people love hashtag positivity. The Samoa Joe, I love the man. And I've got a new series to write about people I don't cover weekly anymore because of the roles they're in, the place their careers are at. So yeah, if you go on my Twitter, you can find that. Wrestling with Takes is loads of articles. And I do this terrible podcast you're watching now. You've been watching for 80 minutes. Other than that, here's what it is, right? Follow me, don't follow me. Who really cares at this point? We're way too deep in together. Here's what it is.
We'll be back Tuesday. Tuesday, twitch.tv/FightfulGaming. We'll be doing more Fire Pro simulation. Assuming everything gets set up and runs well. Let me not quite commit to that because could run into some trouble this weekend with the move and everything. Thank you, everyone. We will talk to y'all on Tuesday.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.